Good morning, everyone. Happy Monday. It's time to read the Fort Dodge Messenger for Monday, December 23rd, 2019. I'm reading to you from the studio located at Friendship Haven in Fort Dodge. My name is Cindy. Glad you're listening. And pardon if I sound a little bit nasally. We'll start with a look at today's weather and headlines from the front page. And actually, you know, they don't even really put the weather on the front page anymore. So we'll flip it over. And I'll just tell you the weather for the week, and then we'll have that done. So today, unbelievable. High around 47, partly sunny, low around 30. And the same tomorrow, except with mostly cloudy. The same with Christmas Day, with mostly cloudy. The same with Thursday, high of 40, mostly cloudy. Friday, partly sunny, a little bit chillier, high of 39, low of 26. Saturday, possible wintry mix with a high of 37 and a low of 21. And Sunday, mostly sunny, high of 31, low around 20. So it looks like it's a good, pretty good travel week. Okay, Fort Dodge's big news yesterday was Buttigieg. I hope I say that right. Buttigieg in Fort Dodge. That's about our election 2020. And then there was a fire response near Barnum. And then a repeat Hometown Pride article out of Pocahontas with Dick Gruber. Okay, Mayor Bemrick, the byline, Buttigieg in Fort Dodge, Mayor Bemrick endorses Mayor Pete. Fort Dodge Mayor Matt Bemrick officially endorsed Pete Buttigieg in Mayor of South Bend, Indiana for the 2020 presidential election during Mayor Pete's town hall campaign stop at the Fort Dodge Middle School's auditorium on Sunday evening. I've been following him since he announced his candidacy, and his platform matches a lot of my values, a lot of things I want to accomplish for our community and our city, Bemrick said following the endorsement. I think his leadership skills, as he's shown as mayor, have been phenomenal. He's really in tune into what's going on nationally and internationally. I just think that type of leadership he could bring to the presidency is the kind I'm looking for. Bemrick welcomed Mayor Pete on stage in front of 426 audience members from Fort Dodge and the surrounding areas. Buttigieg opened by asking the crowd to imagine the day the sun comes up before Dodge and Donald Trump is no longer president of the United States. The reason I'm asking voters everywhere I go to picture that moment is not just to give us something to look forward to, but to ask us to think about what we're going to need from our president and what we're going to need from our presidency in that moment, the candidate said. Because if you think about it, that's not going to be the day that all our problems go away. And of course, there is a picture of him standing in front of a big American flag as he gives this address. The country will even be more divided and polarized after the 2020 election. In that moment, our country will be even more exhausted from fighting and torn up by politics than we are right now. The next president will have to be ready to address those divisions and face those issues when that day comes, he continued. I'm running because that's what I think the presidency is for, he said. Not for glorifying the president, but for unifying and empowering the American people and leading us to a better tomorrow. Buttigieg ran through his key policy points he'd been campaigning on, his Medicare for All Who Want It plan, the climate crisis, the economy, and others. I am compelled by the hope that tells me that we can get this done and the determination to go beyond the fight, he concluded. I know fighting is part of politics, I get it. But never let us get so caught up in the fighting that fighting is all we got. The point is not the fight. The point is to get to the other side, to what is waiting for us is an American experience that is defined not by exclusion, but by belonging. And there's a picture of the Fort Dodge mayor talking as well. And there's a picture of the crowd sitting in the chairs at this event. Okay. Three departments respond to a shop fire near Barnum. No one injured Saturday. And it does show a picture of a volunteer firefighter confronted with a cloud of smoke rising out of a shop that caught fire Saturday night. Volunteer firefighters from Barnum, Clare, and Moreland battled flames and smoke after a shop located at 2119 Fairbanks Avenue was engulfed with fire. No injuries reported. Owner Kyle Dornath said he had two vehicles, a motorcycle, and tools in the shop, which is near his home. He said he was painting a bench in the shop before going inside to fold laundry. When he came back out 10 minutes later, the shop was fully engulfed. The fire was reported at 10 p.m. Webster County Sheriff's deputies were also on the scene. Now our repeat article. Gruber not afraid to get hands dirty. Pocahontas mayor keeps to keep his town's future bright. And it shows Mayor Dick Gruber sitting on a bench that was dedicated to him by his children. When some people think of a mayor, they may think of someone who sits behind a desk making big decisions and signing paperwork. And while Pocahontas Mayor Dick Gruber does sign off on paperwork and help make decisions, he does much more. Serving as mayor for nearly 8 years, Gruber does a lot of work with the local Hometown Pride group on making the town look nice for both residents and visitors. One of the biggest recent projects Gruber contributed to was the remodel of a log cabin next to the Pocahontas statue just off Iowa Highway 3 coming into town. Gruber said he not only helped with the remodel, but he also did much of the work on the front porch himself. That wasn't the only work he did either. We got a new restroom facility built in that from the very ground up in procuring all things that go into a restroom that size. It's freestanding, wheelchair accessible bathroom. But he's also worked on cleaning up the town. We've also had numerous tree plantings around the community. We walk down Highway 3 and Highway 4 throughout town here, picking up refuse, trying to keep the beauty of the place up to snuff. Gruber really enjoys working to help beautify Pocahontas. I just like things to look nice, and if I'm going to live in a community, I want it looking nice, he said. I want good streets, I want yards picked up, lawns mowed, those kinds of things that tend to actually define the character of a community. So I'm interested in that definition of the community as far as being a neat, clean place to live and work as much as we can. He added that he takes a lot of pride in that and feeling that we can promote that to other people going through our community. In particular, Gruber really loves seeing when young people get involved with the community. Gruber spent 45 years as a middle school and high school social studies teacher. I retired here, taught here, I raised 5 daughters here, and I thought it was time maybe I should give back to the community a little bit, and maybe this is a little way I could do it. A number of young people have helped with Hometown Pride projects. We have a May term each year, which is about a week and a half at the end of the school year, in which other courses are provided, he said. Gardening, Bob the Builder, those types of things. We've gotten kids on those projects that have helped us down in our parks. Among the work the students did was build a small train for the playground and helped out with the teepee next to the Pocahontas statue. These things were all done by kids involved in helping out with the community, Gruber said. But there's a big deal to me. That's a big deal with me. I want to get those young people as much as we can, and hopefully it'll have some carryover value when it comes to them getting out on their own and giving back to their communities. Gruber said he wants to be a part of the town's future and the success that comes with it. He's especially proud of all the street projects. I like to think we have some of the better streets of a community our size anywhere. Additionally, a declining and aging population are impacting the town. Gruber wants to make sure the quality of life in the Princess City is high. We have an aging population, we have a population that we're losing in numbers, and we have to be constantly vigilant to that point and try to maintain those life values that will make this community sustain itself. As mayor, Gruber said what makes him happiest is when he gets to honor local people and organizations. You many times have little proclamations or declarations that you have to sign or read. I take great pride in doing that when it concerns entities within our own community. I like to always be on top of those people that are working in our community for us. Therefore, I'm more than happy to get the word out as much on them as much as we can. I like to toot our own horn a bit as far as we have to offer. As far as what we have to offer. He believes that to be a successful mayor, he needs to be visible. I think that as a leader in some way, fashion, or form in our community, it's incumbent for me to be out there and be visible. And I like it that people notice that I'm there, getting my hands dirty or whatever it takes to get the job done. It's also important to be a good listener. He said every morning he goes out to get coffee, spends time listening to what the community tells him. When his children were younger, he would always give them advice that applied to both them as school-age children and as adults in the workplace. Get it done in a timely fashion with some quality. That's what I live by anyway. I really enjoy the community, and I feel I get tremendous support from the people in town, Gruber said. Sometimes it's not always the things they want to hear, but at least they'll listen, and I appreciate that. And then there's two more pictures. One shows him looking over the interior of that log cabin, and then he's posing next to the Pocahontas statue. All right. I'm going to take a sip for my scratchy throat, and then we'll continue with this date in history. Okay. This date from December 2004, the picture is Jess Ford waiting for her weather-delayed flight from the Fort Dodge Regional Airport to Minneapolis. While the delay gave her a small window to make her connecting flight home to Florida, she remained confident she would be home for the holiday. The poll is, are you traveling for Christmas? And you may vote at www.messengernews.net and then check on Sundays for the answer. Today, Monday, December 23rd, the 357th day of 2019, which means there are 8 days left. So, back in 1968, 82 crew members of the U.S. intelligence ship Pueblo were released by North Korea, 11 months after they'd been captured. In 1783, George Washington resigned as commander-in-chief of the Continental Army and retired to his home in Mount Vernon, Virginia. In 1954, the first successful human kidney transplant took place at the Peter Bent Brigham Hospital in Boston as a surgical team removed a kidney from a 23-year-old Ronald Herrick and implanted it in his twin brother, Richard. 1997, a federal jury in Denver convicted Terry Nichols of involuntary manslaughter and conspiracy for his role in the Oklahoma City bombing, declining to find him guilty of murder. Nichols was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. In 2001, Time magazine named New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani as its Person of the Year for his steadfast response to the 9/11 terrorist attack. 10 years ago, Richard and Mayumi Heen, the parents who pulled the Balloon Boy hoax in hopes of landing a reality TV show, were sentenced by a judge in Fort Collins, Colorado to jail, 90 days for him, 20 for her. 5 years ago, the movie The Interview was put back into theaters when Sony Pictures Entertainment announced a limited release of the comedy that had provoked an international incident with North Korea, an outrage over its canceled showing. And our thought for today is from somebody we don't know, unknown author. Oh, for the good old days when people would stop Christmas shopping when they ran out of money. How about that? Our 12 days picture is a pretty one. It is on the lighting display just north of Highway 20 on Webster County Road P-59. You know, right there, that's Larry Jordison's house, I think. Lanny Jordison, excuse me. And we all see that every year as we merge onto Highway 20 or off of Highway 20, right there by Colville. And it says it's been greeting travelers on their journey for many seasons, and that's absolutely right. And very tastefully done. Very tastefully done. Okay. The community calendar today. Monday, Fort Dodge Rotary Club at 11:45 a.m. at the Willow Ridge Golf Course and Restaurant on Madison Avenue. Al-Anon Non-Smoking Club in Fort Dodge at noon at the First United Methodist Church on North 10th. AA Alano Club noon and 7 in Fort Dodge at 12 North 7th Street. All Addictions Anonymous at 5:30 to 6:30 in Webster City Trinity Lutheran Church. The Lion's Den Dance will be tonight from 6 to 9 at the former Isaac Walton Lodge on Expo Drive. There's a variety of music. Bring your own snack, beverage, and hopefully a $5 donation. Bingo tonight at the Fort Museum and Frontier Village Opera House at 6:30. With doors opening at 5 and early bird starting at 6:30. Fort Dodge Duplicate Bridge Club plays tonight at Citizens Central at 6:30. Badger Lions Club is meeting tonight at 7 p.m. at the Badger Community Building, where the public is welcome. And you can always contact Roger Curtis at 545-4487. Fort Dodge Choral Society practice 7:30 to 9:30 tonight at Grace Lutheran Church on South 9th. AA open meeting in Manson tonight at 7:30 at the St. Thomas Catholic Church. And the Young People's Group NA, 8 p.m. in the Humboldt County Courthouse in Dakota City. Our editorial today, Sexton rises to a new leadership role. Rockwell City lawmaker has proven track record in the Iowa House. State Representative Mike Sexton, Republican from Rockwell City, has been chosen by his fellow Republican lawmakers to fill a key leadership role in the House of Representatives. During a caucus Wednesday, they elected him to be the House Majority Whip. In that role, he will be the right-hand man for the House Majority Leader, Matt Winchell of Missouri Valley. It will be my responsibility to take care of the Republican caucus, Sexton told the Messenger. In the big picture of House leadership, Sexton will essentially be in the number four position behind the Speaker of the House, Speaker Pro Tem, and the Majority Leader. While he's reached the leadership ranks of the House of Representatives, Sexton began his government career as a state senator. He served one term in the Senate, from 1999 to 2003 and did not seek re-election. After leaving the Senate, he served on the Rockwell City Lytton South Central Calhoun School Boards. He was then elected to the House of Representatives in 2014, re-elected in 2016 and 2018. Sexton has earned the endorsement of this newspaper repeatedly. He is a thoughtful and hardworking lawmaker. During his years in office, he has worked to help residents and businesses in his district by taking on practical issues that aren't in any way flashy. For instance, in 2015, he authored a plan to make it easier to operate a livestock truck washing facility. We congratulate Sexton on achieving this important position. We look forward to the good work he will do for our area and for the state. Okay. Well, we have a couple school announcements. The St. Paul Preschool is accepting applications. St. Paul Lutheran Preschool is accepting applications for the 2021 school year. A $100 non-refundable registration fee is due at the time of registration. Children who will be 4 by September 15th 2020 may register for the four-year-old preschool program that is offered Monday through Friday with the option of enrichment care in the afternoon. St. Paul's also offers a three-year-old program. Children who will be three by September 15th may register for Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or Tuesday, Thursday classes, a.m. or p.m. options. There must be a minimum of 8 students to open a class. Morning classes have the option of enrichment care. Morning sessions are 8:30 a.m. to 11 a.m. Afternoon sessions are 12:30 p.m. to 3 p.m. Enrichment care is available for students in the morning sessions. Enrichment care includes before school care starting at 7:40 and after school care until 5:30. To register, call the school office at 955-7208 or visit www.stpaulsschoolfd.org to download a registration form to bring into the office. Okay, character counts. With our six pillars of trustworthiness, respect, responsibility, fairness, caring, and citizenship. First person honored, Scarlett Setterdahl. Scarlett Setterdahl, daughter of Mara Hanch and Tom Setterdahl, is a kindergarten student at St. Edmunds. She was nominated by Mrs. Pyle, who writes, Scarlett enjoys learning and is always eager to help her classmates. Scarlett is always friendly and ready to offer a smile to those in need. Scarlett never gives up and works very hard to complete her work in class. She also does an excellent job of setting an example of God's kindness. Next student, McKenna Fievold. McKenna Fievold, daughter of Christina and Dustin Fievold, is a first grader at St. Edmund. She was nominated by Mrs. Gallus, who writes, McKenna works hard and always does her best on her schoolwork and can be counted upon to finish it quickly. McKenna shines the light of Jesus by being kind, helpful, loving, and patient with peers and teachers. Okay. Our sports. Like I say, today's a skinny paper. We did see the Cyclone men's basketball win over the weekend, as well as the Hawkeye men's basketball. And now we'll read an article about a local daughter of a Fort Dodge Senior High grad. Daughter of Fort Dodge Senior High grad, a blue chip volleyball player, Audrey Douglas, a high school All-American, is bound for Auburn. And this is out of Winter Park, Florida, but written by Eric Pratt. A little over 30 years ago, Steve Douglas was a member of the Fort Dodge Boys Basketball Championship team. Last month, Douglas witnessed a similar celebration from a completely different perspective in the stands as a parent. Douglas's daughter, Audrey, was a star player on the Hagerty High School volleyball squad in Oviedo, Florida. On November 16th, Hagerty captured the 7A state title, Florida's largest class, with a sweep of Palm Beach Gardens. People tell you during the recruiting process to pick where you want to go to school first and then think about your sport, said Audrey. A 6'4" middle blocker hitter because of your athletic career could always end when you least expect it. Auburn has a great environment, tremendous people. The campus is beautiful and their volleyball program is amazing. It just felt like home. Steve Douglas graduated from Fort Dodge Senior High in 1989. He was a 6'9" junior reserve for the Dodgers in 1988 when the squad went 23-1 and captured the Class 3A championship. Douglas, who now works for Siemens AG, played football at Fort Dodge as well. My favorite memories as a Dodger centered around the community support for all sports. People would come out and attend all events. Games were the talk of the town. Although I moved away when I went to college, I cherished the group of friends I made at Fort Dodge High that stayed with me to this day. Audrey Douglas received scholarship offers from a number of schools, including many from the Southeastern Conference. Her final list included the likes of Clemson, Tennessee, Mississippi, and others. Douglas verbally committed to Auburn nearly 3 years ago, though, and stayed true to her word. I was very lucky to have so many scholarship offers and schools to choose from, said Douglas, who plans on studying economics and political science. I didn't take any of that for granted. Auburn is close enough to the Douglas residence in suburban Orlando, but I'm still far enough to get the full college experience. Douglas was a four-year starter in high school, and her squads placed in the top five at state each season, while accumulating a record of 98-18. Douglas, three-time Florida All-State and Solon County All-Conference selection, recorded 835 career kills and 370 blocks as a prep standout. She also played 4 years of club volleyball in high school for Top Select Volleyball Academy. Her squads went 30-44-27 overall. They didn't lose much, did they? My wife, April, and I are very proud of Audrey, Steve said. From a young age, she set a goal of wanting to play volleyball for Auburn. She spent many days with the trainers working to improve her athleticism and many evenings in the gym improving her skills. The sport has shown her the importance of setting goals, putting the work to achieve them. She learned the importance of being coachable and a good teammate at a young age. This past year, Audrey was named a Prep Volleyball All-American Senior Ace. Volleyball is such a big sport, especially in Central Florida, Audrey said. When you're younger, especially, you get frustrated because you feel like everyone around you is a lot better. But my dad would always remind me just to focus on myself and put all my energy into keeping track of personal progress instead of trying to measure up to everyone else. Steve stays in touch with many of his former classmates, including Mark Carlson, a fellow ex-Dodger who currently has a daughter, Bryn, playing volleyball at Kansas State. Bryn is a starter for the Wildcats and, like Aubrey, 6'4". We saw Mr. Carlson and Bryn at national travel volleyball tournaments through the years, Audrey said. They're good friends who stay in touch. Steve's mother, Jolene, still lives in Fort Dodge. She's actually at our house right now, Audrey said of her grandmother. She's a snowbird. She has a condo very close to where we live, so we see her quite often, especially during the winter. Audrey has been to Fort Dodge a handful of times as recently as 2 years ago. It's always been a fun trip, Douglas said. I've really enjoyed seeing where my dad grew up and sharing those memories with him. It's great to see his old stomping grounds. All right. On to the hot corner. Well, back in the day, on December 23rd in 1894, the U.S. Golf Association was founded. In 1969, Pete Maravich set an NCAA record by hitting 30 of 31 foul shots and scoring 46 points. In 2002, Rich Gannon breaks Warren Moon's 11-year-old single-season NFL record for completions in the second quarter of the Oakland Raiders game against Denver. Gannon throws a 5-yard pass to Charlie Garner on his 405th completion of the season, breaking the mark set by Moon with the host Houston Oilers in 91. In 2003, Brett Favre passes for 399 yards and 4 touchdowns a day after his father dies, moving into second place in NFL history. 4 career touchdown passes as they won over the Oakland Raiders. And in 2012, Calvin Johnson has 11 catches for 225 yards in the Detroit loss to Atlanta, which means he broke Jerry Rice's single-season yard receiving record. Okay, today on TV, you can watch the men's college basketball Diamond Head Classic, Portland versus Boise State at 3:30 on ESPNU, and Houston versus Georgia Tech at 6 at ESPN2, followed by another game which is yet to be announced. Pro football, Green Bay's at Minnesota tonight, 7:15 on ESPN. There is a bowl game tonight, the Gasparilla Bowl, In college football, Central Florida versus Marshall at 1:30 this afternoon on ESPN. And then you have pro basketball tonight, Toronto at Indiana, New Orleans at Portland. And then hockey, New York Rangers at Philadelphia at 6 p.m. on the NBC Sports Network. All right. Just a reminder that you are listening to the Fort Dodge Messenger on IRIS, the Iowa Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Disabled. The Messenger can be heard daily from 8 and 3 p.m. And if you have any questions or comments, you may call 515-243-6833. And we'll turn to the obituaries now. I think there will be more complete ones later, but we have two short ones announced. George E. Fox, 90, of Fort Dodge, passed away Friday, December 20th at the Simpson Health Care Center in Friendship Haven. Funeral services will be 11 a.m. Saturday, January 11th, 2019, at the First United Methodist Church, with a visitation at 9:30 a.m. Saturday until the service starts. Loffensweiler Seavers Funeral Home is serving the family. And David Peters, 78, of Fort Dodge, passed away on Sunday, former colleague of mine. December 22nd is when he passed away at the Paula J. Baber Hospice Home in Fort Dodge, and services are pending with Gunderson's. Today, Gunderson's is serving Leona June Luckenbill at 1:30 p.m. in their chapel, and visitation with the hour previous to that. And tomorrow at 10 a.m., Gary Miller in the Gunderson Chapel. Visitation is tonight from 4 to 7 at the Gunderson Funeral Home. And Loffensweiler, Lola May Kuhnast, I hope I'm saying that right, Kuehnast, Kuhnast, age 101. That funeral will be Thursday at 2 p.m. in the Zion Lutheran Church in Humboldt, with a visitation 1 hour before. And Barbara Ernst they are serving that family with a private family service at a later date. All right. Sorry for this scratchy throat of mine. Hope it leaves quickly. Well, look at this. It is 8:30, and we are done reading that paper. Isn't that totally crazy? So, that means that we have some extra reading to do today. So first, from an old Reader's Digest, this is the surprising sources of great sayings, which I'll have to admit, I did not know. So, when exactly do the cows come home? Who was the first person to steal someone's thunder? English is full of colorful expressions that have lost their connection to their origin. So, that said, when you learn the checkered past of some of these phrases, you might think twice about using them. Okay, to steal one's thunder. Thor and young adult demigod Percy Jackson may be fiction's most celebrated thunder stealers, but it was 18th century dramatist named John Dennis who popularized the phrase. Dennis invented a device to simulate the sound of thunder for his plays, so clever that a rival dramatist copied his method for a production of Macbeth. In eternal curses light on these scoundrels, Dennis is said to have declared. They have stolen my thunder and don't know how to roll it. Interesting, huh? How about let the cat out of the bag? Who would even put a cat in a bag? The answer may lie in medieval markets where people used to sell piglets tied in bags for farmers to carry home. A shady dealer might swap the piglet in the sack with a less expensive animal, such as a cat. So when you let the cat out of the bag, You were exposing the con to everyone. Next, gadzooks. Sounds, zounds, egad, cripes. These silly exclamations were called minced oaths, were originally Bible-friendly alternatives to swearing. The idea was that if you shouted gadzooks instead of God's hooks, a reference to the nails from the crucifixion, you could stub your toe without running afoul of the third commandment. Other minced oaths, gosh, stood for God, and jeepers for Jesus. Christians have been shouting gadzooks since the 1690s. And my fifth grade teacher didn't even let you use the substitutes if she heard it on the playground. If she heard jeepers, you were in trouble. One of my grade school memories. The seven-year itch. Before the phrase became associated with Marilyn Monroe's iconic skirt, which I didn't know it was, the seven-year itch felt much worse than a playful subway breeze. The term originally referred to scabies, an itching infection caused by mites burrowing underneath a person's skin. Its seven-year moniker referred to how long the bugs could linger. Yuck. The cold shoulder. Giving someone the cold shoulder may have originally meant giving someone a meal, a lousy one. Serving a guest a cold shoulder of mutton, an inexpensive, undesirable dish in the early 19th century, was a subtle way to get rid of him or her. As Sir Walter Scott said in his 1823 novel, St. Ronan's Well, I must tip him with the cold shoulder, or he will be pestering me eternally. Blood is thicker than water. How about that one? You probably think this means you should always put family ahead of friends. In fact, it originally may have meant the opposite. The full maxim was, the blood of the covenant is thicker than the water of the womb, with covenant referring to friendship. In other words, it was your friends, your blood brothers, if you will, who were with you through thick and thin. Next one. Last one, till the cows come home. Clearly, this has to do with cattle curfews, right? It sort of does. Cows were often milked in their barns at night, making the task one of the last on a farmer's to-do list. But let's hope he wouldn't wait forever to do the job, as the phrase implies now. The expression has been around since at least the late 1500s and is likely to continue until, well, you know. Isn't that cute? Okay, this is from the holiday issue of Our Iowa right now. And I don't know about you, but food's been on the brain as I make my lists and still are making lists. And so this is about kitchen calamities. Embarrassing kitchen calamities. A couple years ago, I had just put the finishing touch on dinner. The potatoes were mashed and the gravy was simmering. I turned off the stove and it was time to take out my daughter's casserole. Without thinking, I moved the gravy to another burner to make room for the vegetable casserole. But the glass dish burst from the heat of the stove and I had casserole all over the floor and myself. What a mess. So apparently she put the casserole on top of that burner. My family rushed upstairs to see what the loud noise was and found the kitchen covered in casserole. To this day, my whole family, grandkids included, ask every holiday if we'll have exploding casserole again this year. When my daughter got married in 1996, I had some friends coming over the morning before to make food for the meal at the reception. I thought I should make something to serve when everyone arrived, so I found a recipe for a coffee cake. It called for topping to pour over the batter and then to be sprinkled with cinnamon. My son had the first slice and after taking a few bites declared he didn't like the coffee cake. I didn't think anything of it until I served it to my daughter, and she said it tasted funny, kind of spicy. Now I had to have a taste, and she was right. It had a bite to it. I looked in the cupboard, and lo and behold, the bottles for cinnamon and chili powder were practically identical. I never lived it down at my family. Still won't let me make coffee cake. Years ago, while cleaning up after a family holiday, I noticed one particular cookie on several plates with only a single bite taken out of it, and they were deliciously looking peanut butter balls covered in chocolate. Distracted by my cleaning, I forgot about them until a young niece bit into one of them and proclaimed, "This tastes awful." One of my sisters took umbrage at this, explaining that a lot of work went into that treat. She went into the kitchen and snatched a peanut butter ball off the tray and took a bite. Her expected delight immediately turned sour. She grabbed the remaining cookies and tossed them in the wastebasket. Chagrined, she told us that the container of baking soda and powdered sugar looked exactly alike. Oh, my. When I was first married, I decided to surprise my husband and make a pie. His youngest sister was at our place and was watching me as I tried to make my first pie crust. It was too stiff at first, so I added more water. Then it was too sticky, so I added flour. Soon I had a huge ball of what was supposed to be pie crust, but looked anything like it. My sister-in-law announced that she would go get her mom to help. Not wanting to admit my failure to my mother-in-law, I sprinted across the yard and chucked the dough ball into the hog pen. So my husband never tasted my first pie crust, but the hogs loved it. When I was 13 or 14, I was dabbling in baking on my own. While home alone one day, I began with a batch of chocolate chip cookies. I got several ingredients in the mixing bowl when I discovered we were out of eggs. Instead of stopping, I thought I would just substitute water. I finished mixing the ingredients and dumped in a whole bag of chocolate chips. Looked a little suspect, but I thought the oven would get them into ship shape. Boy, was I wrong. That burnt chocolatey mess that I scraped off the baking sheet was not even fit for a wild animal. I learned an important lesson that day. And now, if I ever start cookies and realize I don't have eggs, I just put the dough in the fridge and enjoy that. Yep. Okay. Well, I had two articles picked out, and now I've read both of those already. So how about a chocolate story this time of year? And you may have heard part of this before. I'm not sure. This is about from Long Grove, Iowa, about Long Grove's candy man becoming a media, as he became a media darling because of Hershey. Life got a bit sweeter this past summer for Bob Williams of Long Grove. Okay, so just about 6 months ago. You might recall Bob, 94, who was featured as our Iowa's country character last winter's December-January issue. For the past decade, Bob has been handing out giant-sized Hershey chocolate bars to friends and strangers while on his daily walks around town. Bob buys the candy out of the goodness of his heart and shares it with others as his way of spreading joy and goodwill in his community. All he hopes for in return is a smile to know that he's brightened someone's day. After Bob's story was published in our Iowa, it found its way to Hershey's corporate offices in Hershey, Pennsylvania. A former Iowan, who's a Hershey employee, saw the story and showed it to the top company executives. They were touched in a big way by Bob's kindness and were tickled to read that he used Hershey candy for carrying out his deeds. So Hershey's had a plan. In an ironic coincidence, Hershey had already been working on a new marketing campaign to show consumers how a Hershey chocolate bar can bring a smile to anyone who receives one. They had planned to launch an effort called Heartwarming the World on September 13th, the day the founder of Milton, that day was the founder of Milton Hershey's 161st birthday. Once Bob's story reached Hershey's headquarters, the company sent Anna Lingeris, a senior manager into communications who heads up Hershey's earned media and brand publicity, on a mission to get in touch with Bob. In mid-July, she flew to Iowa to meet Bob. Anna had a heartfelt 2-hour visit with Bob and let him know that Hershey would like him to be part of their Heartwarming the World campaign by featuring him in a short promotional video. "Bob, we love who you are and what you're doing," Anna relayed. "You've become the inspiration for something we want to do with our company." On September 13th, "We plan to shut down our company operations across the country so that our employees can go out and give people a Hershey bar to make them smile, just like you do." Anna even invited Bob to fly out to Hershey headquarters sometime on the company jet. "Well, thanks for the invitation," Bob said with a smile, "but these days I'm pretty content to stay close to home." So Anna came back to him in late August, along with a film crew from New York and Chicago, to capture an interview with Bob and his two close friends, Jan Getch and Jan Hartwig Hagen. The crew also filmed Bob handing out candy bars and garnered comments from folks he's touched around town over the years, including children. His video went viral on September 13th. Just as Anna promised, Bob's heartwarming 2-minute video was released by Hershey's, and they quickly spread across national TV, social media, and on newspaper and magazine webs via the internet. On ABC Television's Good Morning America Day, co-host Sarah Haynes and native Iowan, and former NFL star Mike Strahan talked about Bob's good deeds while Hershey employees handed out chocolate bars to those in the studio audience. ABC Nightly News covered the story as well. Bob's video was shown on Inside Edition, CNN, Fox News, and a host of other television and internet outlets over the next few days. Media on both coasts and around the world picked up the story, as did Iowa TV stations and newspapers. At one point during their journey together, Anna told Bob that she considered him a modern-day Milton Hershey, who founded the company in 1894 and who was always looking for kind ways to treat his employees. In return, Bob shared that he developed a sweet tooth for Hershey bars when he was a kid. Every time he had an extra penny, he would walk across the street from the school to the grocery store to buy the chocolate treat. Through it all, Bob has remained humble as ever and still brings a chuckle to those around him with his dry sense of humor. "I don't know what to say," Bob says softly about the fame that's come his way. "I'm speechless. I haven't had this much attention since the third year I was in second grade." I was on a bus trip on September 13th, so I don't recall seeing that video. I wonder if I can find it on YouTube or something. So what a cool story. Cool story. Okay. I keep looking here, people. Maybe we need some jokes. But I have to look a little bit. I think I've read most of the jokes in this one. I'm looking. I should have done more research. How about, let's see, we have about 5 minutes. I think. Let's see. Okay, we're going to do vocabulary. This is about science words, oofda. Okay, sci-fi, in fact, with some folklore and fantasy. Do you know the word grok? G-R-O-K, it's a verb. Does that mean to understand profoundly, to stun, as with a gun, or to shed, as the coat of an animal? if you grok something. Oh my. The answer is to understand profoundly. Elspeth grokked the oceans and was able to manipulate their currents. I missed it. Ooh, I'm not even sure how to say it. I'm going to say psionic. P-S-I-O-N-I-C. Having paranormal ability, alive but frozen, or synthetic. It is an adjective. Paranormal ability. That would be a noun, wouldn't it? Alive but frozen and synthetic. So I'm going to go with B. And I am wrong. Having abnormal ability. Artie wasn't surprised to see Tara moving the pen using her psionic powers. 3, Chimera. And it's even capitalized. It's a noun, a constellation named for a Greek scholar, a mythical monster, or Martian Chronicles villain. Is it a constellation, a monster, or a villain? It is a mythical monster, mythological monster. Okay, the Chimera is part lion, goat, and serpent. A chrononaut. Is that a space traveler, a pilot in orbit, or a time traveler? A chrononaut. That's a noun. Chrononaut, like astronaut, chrononaut. I think I might have this one. A time traveler, because of the word chrono, time-based. Draconic. It's an adjective. Is it relating to a dragon? Is it alien? Or is it to be cruel and severe? If you're draconic, you are relating to a dragon. What's the name of Pete's draconic friend in the kids' movie? Sapient is an adjective. Are you artificially alive, having characteristics of multiple animals, or are you keen and discerning? If you are sapient, you are keen and discerning. Keen and discerning, which was C. I tell you, this is the worst I've ever done. Terraform, a verb. To destroy with heat, to alter an environment so it can support life, or to group similar species. A, destroy heat with heat. B, alter an environment so it can support life. Or C, group similar species. And that verb means to alter an environment. The room will have to be terraformed before anyone else can move in. Cryonics, a practice of freezing a dead person in hope of restoring life. This is the noun. Is it artificial intelligence, or is it the study of sea creatures when you are practicing cryonics? And that is freezing a dead person in hopes of restoring life. Heard about that one. How about, lycanthropic. L-Y-C-A-N-T-H-R-O-P-I-C. I'm going to say that's lycanthropic. Adjective. Does that mean you're relating to fairies? Or are relating to werewolves, or of or relating to celestial phenomena as an adjective? My, I don't even have a clue. Relating to fairies, werewolves, or celestial phenomena. Werewolves, lycanthropic dreams. Tom sought advice from his doctor. Here's a noun, selenology. S-E-L-E-N-O-L-O-G-Y. Selenology. Is that the study of microorganisms? Is it the study of Greek gods? Or is it the study of the moon? Because we know ology is a study. So microorganisms, Greek gods, or the moon? Well, moon. Perhaps you shouldn't take up selenology if you're afraid of werewolves. Wow. 11, dystopia, which is a noun. Is that cosmic chaos, nightmarish society, or an underwater civilization? To have dystopia. Cosmic chaos, nightmarish society, or underwater civilization. And it is nightmarish society. With all its freaks and geeks, Beth compared her office to the dystopia of Orwell's 1984. Android, is that a robot with a human shape, a robot with skin, or a human with robotic limbs? What kind of robotic person is an android? And that is a robot with a human shape, like in Star Wars. Cyborg, human-like alien, a robot with artificial intelligence, or a bionic human? Do you know that, what that cyborg means? It means a bionic human, which was like Steve Austin, the $6 million man in the 70s. And now an adjective, telluric, T-E-L-L-U-R-I-C. Of or relating to the earth, gifted with extrasensory perception, or prone to exploding. It is relating to the earth. Aboard ship, the docile aliens were eager to hear Alex's telluric tales. And quickly, I think that's it. I only got one, two, oh my, not very good. I hope you learned something about sci-fi today, as it brings us to the end of reading for you and the reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger. We thank the home. We thank Friendship Haven for giving Iris a home in Fort Dodge for so many years. We thank you for listening with Iris and the Reading Information Service for the Blind. And I hope that you have a blessed holiday. A relaxing holiday. Hope that you don't eat too many sweets, which I'm always tempted to do. And again, as we remember the real meaning of the season, we wish you a dream to bless and a star to guide, and have a very, very, very Merry Christmas.